Hi, this is James White once again for the Solution Series, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Corey Lynn, and Solution Series is brought to you by Slattery.com and Corey'sDigs.com, and remarkably enough, we have the founders of both of those organizations, those websites, on with us today, along with Ricardo Oscom, and we're delighted to have you both here. Thanks so much for joining us. Corey, great to be with you once again for this Solution Series. It's going to be fantastic.
It is going to be fantastic. I cannot believe we're already at the finale of the series. It flew by.
It really did.
I remember when we first talked about doing it, and it just seems like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to give Ricardo, because we've had Catherine on before, but I'd like to give Ricardo a proper introduction here, if I might. Ricardo,
yes, sir.
Ricardo Oscom provides research, due diligence, analytics, and marketing support to Solari Screens. He is co-author of Building Wealth at the Solari Report. And Ricardo, it's great to have you on the Solution Series for the first time. Great to have you here.
Thank you for having me, sir.
You're quite welcome. Okay, so we're just going to go ahead and roll with it. We got a lot to cover here today. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the Solution Series and you know, maybe what led to it. And Catherine, you talked about it a little bit off air. We had, I think, 23 or 24 guests. We had 24 episodes. All of them were spectacular in their own way, and a lot of them got a lot of great information off. So, Catherine, if you could, let's start with you. You know, our premise was, and we talked about with Corey, and then she talked about with you. There's a lot of people out there, you know, talking about the problems. They're in the news every day. You know, you can tune into 25 different shows talking about what's wrong, but not very many shows that really give you solutions on how to analyze what's wrong and then adapt to it so you can be able to survive either financially or protect yourself, you know, physically, that type of thing. So do you care to comment on that just to start?
Yeah, and that includes building a business that helps other people adapt successfully, which is what many of your guests focused on in their Solution Series. So Corey had just done an amazing home run on vaccine passports, and we published your book on vaccine passports. If you haven't seen it, it's a remarkable document to help people understand how control is being steadily implemented. And our team was so excited about it. We approached Corey about doing more in control, and Corey said, I don't want to talk about the problems anymore. I want to talk about real solutions. She had written a piece for our Take Action wrap-up called Loosen Technology's Grip, which is an amazingly popular piece. We've made it public. And it was all about how to get technology working for you instead of literally, you know, being the surveillance device that sort of harvests you and your economics and your energy. So when I heard that, I said, Corey, that would be fantastic. And we got very, very excited. But it was, you know, you have to turn the aircraft carrier from talking about control and problems to real solutions. So it's a big, big turn. And we agreed we'd do two a month. And that's what we've been doing since. And it has flown by. It's amazing because it just feels like yesterday that when Corey decided to do this.
You know, Ricardo, go ahead, Corey.
No. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Ricardo, again, thanks for joining us here today. You know, Catherine is seen by many in the conservative circles and people that I know as, you know, her she's seen as an icon. I know she probably doesn't feel that way about herself, but her advice is great and her financial acumen is just, it's razor sharp. Tell us if you can, you know, about working with Catherine. It's got to be something that's pretty incredible. Ended up with Solari.com and Solari Report of all places.
Yes, sir. So let me outline a little bit where my role comes in. So I work with Catherine on research, providing research on the Solari Report, but mostly in another company called Solari Investment Screens, where our job is really to sift out which companies have got excellent governance and are run in such a way that arguably with good governance are going to make the right decisions in the future. Just to get back real quick to the vaccine ID book that was aforementioned, that book was really helpful in that journey, because it outlined all of the big players that were sort of part of rolling out that vaccine ID and passport infrastructure. Needless to say, those are not the companies that we would be focusing on. The companies that we did focus on are the ones that are out there building productive companies, doing productive things, both for the shareholders, as well as for the other stakeholders, you would say, that they interact with, be it the communities that they operate in, their employees, everybody's got to do with their business. So that's really where I come in.
And what did you think of the Solution Series, Ricardo?
I thought it was incredibly helpful. A lot of this is really coming back to working with Catherine. What what really helps me is going from the macro picture to the micro picture. Things that are going on in the macro, politics, geopolitics, and what's going on out there, and then reducing that to something actionable within the micro, i.e. the companies that we interact with, that we buy from, etc. And the good thing about the solution series is it takes all of that stuff that's going out there and reduces that to an actionable package that you can actually work with in your micro environment. What can you do to help your family? What can you do to help your business? How do you operate within your local community instead of just staying within that macro realm, which is incredibly helpful, but you want to be able to navigate both tiers. So that's really what it did for me mostly. Second point would also be that the solution series is really about those people that have accepted responsibility over their circumstances and said, I accept everything that's going out there as a fact, and I'm going to work within my realm to do something about it. What can I do within my community, within my circles, my family, to step up and accept the responsibility over our circumstances? And I will get back to that once we start talking about the building wealth and the curriculum we've built. But that's really what it did for me, those two main points.
Yeah, it was really, I was really, really impressed with everyone we had on. And do you have the image I sent you that you can show, James?
I just want to
give a, which of course I don't have handy here and I can't see it on your screen. So I'm going to let you read off all the names, James.
We're going to give a special thanks to our incredible Solution Series guests. And no specific, did you do them in order of appearance? Is that what you did?
I did, okay. Except for Catherine was on at the beginning and at the end.
Correct.
So I put her at the end with Ricardo.
So this will be an order of appearance. Jim Gale, John Kane Carter, Stefan Verstappen, John Jacob Schmidt, Sheriff Richard Mack, Franklin Sanders, David DeBine, Nancy O'Brien, Paola Brown, Rich Sheban, Jennifer Walters, Matt R. Hale, Ann Christensen, Marie McDonald, Rob Braxman, Richard Murfert, Tom and Robin Walker, Chris Ann Hall, Fiona Price, Matt from NC Scout, Patrick Wood, Matt Roski, and of course, our own Catherine Austin Fitz and Ricardo Oscom. I want to give all of those guests special thanks for making the Solution Series what it was. We couldn't have done it without you. So
right, and I've taken that. So many of their tips and actually put those tools to
too.
Use. So it's been incredible for me. You know, I've learned just as much as all of our listeners have.
Yeah, my vegetable garden has copper wires sticking out of all the plants.
Mine too.
Sorry, Catherine.
Go ahead, Catherine.
So I also think it's very inspiring when you see person after person who, as Ricardo said, is taking responsibility. And then is creating ideas, products, services, information to help all the people around them, all the people they connect with, and building businesses and enterprises doing this. So what Ricardo and I will tell you, the most important thing I think to building wealth is building great enterprises. And these are, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs who are generating income by helping other people as opposed to generating income by harming other people. And that is to see many, many, many people doing that, doing a good job of that. To me, it's just very heartwarming and inspiring and says, you know, don't despair of what's going wrong. You know, get in the trenches and start building real solutions.
Right. And on that point of wealth, I think we need to define wealth a little bit, because what you just spoke of, I think that a lot of people will say, well, wait a minute, we're going to get into building wealth and we're going to be talking about money. We're going to be talking about finance, but they're all coming for our money. So what's the point?
You know? Money is a financial tool. It's not wealth.
Right.
It's a financial tool that you can use to make money or to build wealth or destroy wealth. And, you know, wealth is something far different. The we're going to get into this today. Financial equity is financial wealth, but there's living equity. And equity is a far broader concept of wealth than just, than just money. The one thing I do want to say, we have right now a financial system that destroys a lot of wealth because it's centralizing wealth in a way that is very expensive and very destructive. It doesn't have to be like that. A financial system can be one that supports tremendous building wealth, and the wealth building opportunity today is extraordinary if we could reverse the tyranny. And so one of the quotes I use in the building wealth presentation is, I got resoundingly criticized by a internet commentator saying, I was greedy and encouraging financial greed and selfishness. And so I said, you can build wealth, you can build poverty, or you can build nothing. Which do you prefer?
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And so the two of you, which by the way, Ricardo's from the Netherlands, who I had the pleasure of meeting in Tennessee last year. And the two of you have teamed up and you've put together this incredible tool for everyone, called Building Wealth, that everyone will have access to, and we'll provide access to our subscribers as well. And you guys are going to take us through the what you put. It's sort of like a curriculum, but like what you like to call a buffet, where it's actionable tools, so much good information. I was looking through it this morning. I love the way you guys structured it. I like how you have the little video, the explanation and table contents, and then you provide all these excellent resources. So that's what we're going to get into now to show people, about building wealth. And that's what I like about it, is we're not, if people can just take their mind off of strictly just money for a minute and understand the overall concept of it, so much more than that.
And if I can just latch on to that, Corey, as Catherine just alluded to, there really isn't a middle of the road anymore. Either you start building wealth or you start losing wealth. Because the status quo is that inflation is rapidly increasing. There are all these regulatory changes that are coming and that are mitigating your possibilities to start a business or retain your sense of personal sovereignty, financial transaction freedom. These are all, we're standing to lose as if we do nothing. So the status quo is really that you're on the losing end. So you want to start proactively building. The idea behind the curriculum is we're going to provide something for those people, that group of people that actually want to go out and do that and provide the resources that they can then use wherever they're coming from. That's the idea behind the buffet structure.
I love it. I love
Right.
it.
And I just want to also mention that if you read our financial transaction memo, we recognize that the centralizers want complete control. And as the World Economic Forum has said, it's 2030 and you have no assets. They want to take all the real assets. And so part of building wealth is doing what we can in our own lives and family to build wealth. But we also have to recognize that we all have to work together to ensure that we maintain our freedoms, including financial transaction freedom. If we don't do that shared responsibility to protect our freedoms, then of course it's going to be a very different ball game. So there's a track that you follow on an individual level, but there's a track we have to follow together on the global level, and you can do both, and the Building Wealth curriculum helps you do both.
That's awesome. Do you think we should have you give just a brief summary on what you're seeing in the financial climate right now before we dig into this?
So we have experienced significant inflation coming out of the going direct reset. It was set off by the central bankers printing enormous amounts of money, including the Federal Reserve. So we have one segment of society that is rich with resources and was buying during the pandemic, is ready to buy again. And we also know that although we seem to have broken for the summer, the leadership of the central banking system and sort of the global international institutions are working on a variety of different scenarios that could throw us into a severe deflation and make it easy for the people who have those cash to consolidate both the banking system and essentially wipe out our governmental and individual sovereignty. So we are in a process where they are trying to reset the whole global financial system and assert total central control, and do that ultimately by instituting financial transaction control. And of course, our job at Solari, your job at Cory Digs, is to make freedom, to make it possible for all of our people to remain free. And the more of us who remain free and continue to build wealth, the greater the chances they are going to fail. As you know, I think they're going to fail. And the question is, how do we stay in the game and endure until then? So we are coming into either this fall or next year an incredible sort of new push by the centralizers to centralize. And the question is, which sort of op will they use to do it? Will they use climate change? Will they use, they'll certainly use financial transaction control. Will they use another pandemic? You know, they're poised to use a lot of different a lot of different ways of going around and grabbing resources. And that's what we're all dealing with. How are we going to protect our resources and protect our families and turtle through this period?
Catherine, if I may ask, what's your thoughts on the BRICS, development of the BRICS currency system? I think it's going to be gold-backed. They're talking resource-backed. I don't know if it's all going to be gold. Is that going to
No, so the BRICS are not making a new currency.
Okay.
What the BRICS are doing is working on creating a trade and settlement system where they can use gold, and they've been working on swap lines. And what they're trying to do is, at a wholesale level, be far more resilient in their ability to trade with each other using their own currencies or gold, and do it in a way that avoids dollar sanctions. So they all look and saw what happened to Russia. They don't want that happening to them. They don't even want the threat of it to be used for political. Now, that effort by the BRICS has been going on since the BRICS were formed. So the East Asia financial crisis scared the emerging markets to death about this kind of financial transaction control. So did the financial crisis. If you read at Solari, The State of Our Currency, one of our wrap-ups is now public, we do a great job of describing the history of the dollar system, which is still very dangerous and dominant. But whether it's you and me trying to make sure that we can't get cornered by financial transaction control, every country and every institution that trades in the world is trying to do the same thing, as are the BRICS. There's been a lot of sort of fear porn, hope porn around the August meeting, and it's going to be one of those summer meetings that's very important to watch, because there is no doubt that they are trying to build as many ways to erode the dollar market share as possible. But don't expect any kind of big bang coming in August.
Thank you for that. Corey?
All right. Well, should we, Ricardo, let you take it away and start the presentation on building wealth?
I'd be delighted to. Let me just present this on screen. Get us up and running.
Okay.
Here we go. Just give me a sign whenever you can see that.
Yep, we can see it. Looks good.
You're good. Looks good.
Is it full screen?
Full screen. Larger.
There you go. Fantastic. All right, then without further ado, let's jump in. So what we were trying to achieve with the building wealth curriculum is really give that that group of people that has accepted responsibility over their circumstances and that of their families and loved ones a way of accessing those resources they really want to prioritize focusing on in the next couple of months, next couple of years, and extract what they need in their situation. So the idea is really somebody might come out of a situation where they have had relative to everybody else more background in, say, the financial sector. They've been a CPA, etc. And they might want to learn more about risk management, right? Or they might want to learn more about navigation tools. And I will go through each of the pillars together with Catherine and talk a little bit about what they represent and the underlying links you will find there. But the idea is somebody might go in and just extract whatever it is they need, right? Somebody will not necessarily have the financial training. They can go in, focus on building financial equity. That's really how to do it. It's not a chronological thing where you go from A to Z. It's you go in and you extract whatever it is you need in your situation. But before you do that, before you jump into this adventure, this journey, you're going to need a vision. You need to know where you're going to end up if everything goes according to plan. That long-term vision of your free and inspired life. This is not somebody else's vision. Nobody can do this for you. You really have to sit down and invest the time and get a clear vision, a clear purpose, a clear goal, what it is you're going to be spending your time and energy on, and what it is you want to manifest. That's your free and inspired life for you and your loved ones. It's also about accepting that responsibility. I keep saying that, but it's so critical. The status quo is you will be losing. So you have to really go in there and invest the time and energy continuously to be able to build that end state that you so much desire. So that's really what your free and inspired life is all about. And as you set out on this journey, you have a clear understanding of where it is you're going. You're going to need a good navigation tool. You're going to need a good map. In the last 2 days, we had a couple of events here in Tennessee, and by a dear friend of ours, a professor, he showed me this collection of maps that were drawn by high school, sorry, college students that just went through high school here in the United States. And these students were asked the question, given what's going on between Russia and Ukraine and all of that, please draw out on this map that had no, it just had lines. So it just showed you the geographical location of the countries, had no names to them. The exercise was to draw out, to write down where the Ukraine is and its bordering countries. Now, these students, and this is quite a symptom, allegedly what I hear from this professor, this is a symptom of what's going on in the educational realm. And that's just one channel. I'll get to that in a minute. But the results were quite frightening, to be honest. Everything from Hungary, where Poland sat, to Turkey representing Nepal, or students that even had the map the upside down. They hadn't turned completely. Upside was down. So what I'm trying to get at is, if you go out and you want to manifest that vision of your free and inspired life, but you're doing it with the wrong map, you're never going to get there. Instead, you're going to move into a different direction. So what you really want to do is you want to understand the environment that we're in and the risks that are to be found in that environment. So you're going to work on building your map, your navigation tool to working through that environment that is also dangerous. That's really what navigation tools is about. Risk management. Catherine, you want to take that one?
Yeah. So one of the things, the quote under navigation tools is, there's an official reality and then there's reality. And official reality is for the cocktail party, and reality is for the investment of your time. And a lot of building wealth came out of my, I worked as an investment advisor for 10 years, and I really collected an extraordinary list of all the mistakes people make that really get them in trouble. So you can go down to risk management. And what I discovered is people were using the official reality for their risk management and then bringing reality to the cocktail party, which is exactly the opposite of what you want to do. It is absolutely, you know, for your job or for your navigation of society, you may want to present the official narrative as what you believe in. But for God's sakes, you cannot afford to use the official reality for your risk management. You have to understand what is real, and you have to act on what is real for both your investment and risk management. Now, 20 or 30 years ago, we lived in a relatively lawful and growing economy, and risk management was not that important. We could assume if we banked at any bank, it would be good, or the deposit insurance would cover it, or that the, you know, any large brokerage firm was honest. You know, we didn't have to worry about the Madoff financial frauds and other financial frauds or precious metal scams, or, you know, so that as the corruption has grown, risk management becomes more and more important. One of the examples I always give is, if you don't understand how to navigate the healthcare system and you are harmed by healthcare lies and fraud, a family can be bankrupted by one healthcare lie or fraud. You know, we've certainly seen that with what's happened with COVID-19 and injections causing death and disability that also bankrupt a family. And so I often tell people, in this environment, you don't need an investment strategy, you need a war strategy. And you need a war strategy not to just protect your financial resources, to protect your time, to protect your health, to protect your happiness, to protect your love within the family. You know, so one health fraud can destroy a marriage, it can destroy a family, it can destroy the relationships of the futures of siblings. And so in something where we're dealing with very significant asymmetrical warfare, which every one of us is, risk management becomes more and more and more important. And again, the combination of good navigation tools and good risk management, I have seen families prosper and grow while other families who didn't practice it just absolutely wiped out and destroyed. So I cannot stress enough, in this environment, risk management is absolutely critical, but it must be combined with good navigation tools. Those come first.
I have a question, if I can. You know, pardon me, the older you get, the more risk you may have to take on. Let's say if you haven't saved for, you start saving when you're 40, you may have to take a little bit more of a risky investment approach to be able to achieve what you want to do in a shorter period of time. Are there still paths with that type of scenario with the risk management that people can go down, Catherine, even if they haven't done anything, really haven't done any saving
Yeah, so you know, there's not every here's if people keep looking for a risk-free. You know, we all want the three chariots to line up in the slot machine, the money to come out and do it with no risk. Doesn't exist. So the problem, all the investments and all the places we put our time or our resources have risk. What you want is reward, you know, to be commensurate or even better than the risk. So you want to get the risk reward relationship right. And part of doing that is not betting the ranch on everything. And what the building wealth encourages people to do is to adopt the habits of essentially extreme productivity, so that with everything you're doing, you're either adding to your wealth or you're learning things, you know, if things, because not everything works, you get failures, you keep moving forward in the direction. So if you're not building wealth, you're learning about building wealth in everything you do. And so yeah, there are plenty of sort of high reward things that you can do as you age. I think the question is, can you do them in a way where you have the intellectual mastery sufficient? And do you do them in association with people who have the integrity and the competency, you know, that make it good to be in business with? If you can get the right risky ventures with very high quality, competent people, you know, you can make fortunes. Remember the guy, you know, we see many, so Ricardo and I look at many enterprises, including enterprises that people start in their 50s and 60s that are hugely successful and build millions, if not billions. So, you know, a lot of it comes down to, are you good at getting intellectual mastery, making proper risk assessments, and then teaming up with high integrity people? A lot of the money gets lost because you team up with low integrity people, or people are just not competent what they do.
Yeah, well said. Well said.
So let us move on to living equity, because the living equity and financial equity, which is on the next slide, are really the that's the embodiment of everything you are truly trying to build when you are starting to build wealth. That's what it's all about. It's the living equity in your life, and it's the financial equity in your life, and they work in synchronicity to help each other. The living equity is everything you can't put a price tag on. It's the family you have around you, the relationships you build with friends and loved ones. It's the land that you're on. It's the knowledge that you build, the education you give yourself, your health, all of that you can't put a price tag on, which is vital. There's no need becoming a billionaire if you start to lose everything because you're in ill health, right? What good is that? Same way the other way around. You want to build both of them, and you want your financial wealth, your tools to help your living equity. Because your living equity is what's going to need that seed capital coming out of your financial tools to put your kids through college, to a good university, or go out and have the means to come up with a private school or a private teacher. This is the money you need to buy good quality meat, good quality vegetables. So again, coming back to that scenario where if you don't do anything, if you're just going to settle for comfort and not make the tough decisions, you're going to eat crappy food. You're going to a school that's not going to train you well, right? You're putting yourself into danger if you don't make those hard decisions to actively start building wealth. So your living equity is everything you can't put a price tag on, and you want to nurture those relationships. You want to build them. So part of this is also deciding, who am I going to need to live my free and inspired life? What are the relationships I want to build? What does that family structure look like? And what do I need from a financial standpoint? So really the financial wealth to be able to do all of that. I want to have that financial buffer to be able to protect my family or move us to a different jurisdiction if need be. That's really what that is all about. Those are the tools you need to put your kids through a good college, to provide good quality meat, good quality protein, supply all of that, and have them work in synchronicity. Only then you can build something that lasts throughout generations. That's what wealth to me really encompasses, is something that you build and that your family keeps involved in. It secures everything you need, and you keep that, you protect that.
So I just want to jump in and say it's important to understand that all financial wealth comes from life. It starts with life. And that's why you have this virtuous circle once you get it going. Life, you build the life, the culture, the education, the power, the strength to build financial wealth, but then the financial wealth is designed to support the living equity, the life. So, you know, it is a tool, and it's absolutely essential in your life to build alignment between your financial wealth and your living wealth, and have them be a virtuous circle that support and feed each other.
And one of the things you have on your table of contents, which in this one runs from A through O, you start out with spiritual grounding, which I love because that's so, and that's what I like about the way how you guys structured this is you get into all areas of being, of living. And right now, a lot of people are worn down and they have to be able to balance and ground themselves and separate themselves from the negativity or laugh at it. You know, we have to have humor. And so I think all of that's really important. One of the things I'm just curious for you guys to throw out, can you throw out some examples of businesses since you've done a lot of research on this, whether, you know, small scale businesses, larger scale businesses, especially ones that are not just building for oneself or one's family, but that are actually contributing to community and others and helping other people.
So, Ricardo, you and I have to brag about Crossing Creek Farm because we just did
We
two
do.
outdoor presentations at Crossing Creek Farm in Shelbyville, Tennessee. They have a website, you can get it. And one of the most important big picture solutions to the things that face us is moving out of industrial ag agriculture back to regenerative agriculture. And Crossing Creek Farm is a farm here in Shelbyville, Tennessee, where Ricardo and I are right now. And they have a regenerative farm. They're raising chickens. They're selling eggs. They are doing all sorts of livestock, pork, cattle. And they have a wonderful farm store. So they have many different lines of business. It's a family. So you have 3 generations on the farm, and part of what they're trying to do is build an incredibly healthy, wonderful life for all 3 generations. So they have the farm. They created a farm store which is open 3 or 4 days a week, which is remarkable. The food is incredible, and it's selling their products, but it's also selling products from, you know, from different providers relatively close by. Some of the seafood comes from the Gulf, so it comes up through Mississippi and Alabama. But more and more, that farm store is a magnet for people in this area who just want unbelievably healthy food that they can trust. Part of it is not having it labeled as any particular kind of food, literally knowing your farmers, knowing they're eating the food, and knowing exactly what practices they're following. They also have a regenerative farm be an Airbnb thing. They have a cottage that you can rent, and they have space for RV. And this neighborhood is an area is a draw, and so people come, and they've got a line of businesses with tourists, people coming. They've just started an educational not-for-profit to teach people how to do regenerative farming. They have an outdoor amphitheater where all sorts of groups have presentations. People come together to discuss how we protect financial transaction freedom. If you look at all the legislators who've been doing wonderful things to support homesteading and regenerative farming, they're in touch back and forth, and the different groups that gather and networks gather to figure out, okay, what do we need the legislator to do next to support homesteading and regenerative farming? So there's a unbelievable sort of viral network growing out of Crossing Creek Farm. And so, Ricardo, you were just there, and it was your first visit to Crossing Creek Farm this weekend. Did you see a building wealth kind of ecosystem going on there?
Absolutely. And I just want to latch on to what you just said about the way they set up the farm. They've got the whole family is working and contributing to the operation. That to me is a family wealth building operation, and they're keeping their family close. Far too often you hear about kids going through college, getting a job, and then moving out. This is a way of keeping them all close, keeping them all protected at the same farm, keeping them all within the same space, and they're all contributing. On screen, you're now seeing this quote by Peter Lynch about know what you own and why you own it. And traditionally, that is applied to the investment realm of, say, the true financial investments, like which stocks to buy, which bonds to buy, understanding the companies that you're investing in. And that's all true, but I would extend that to you are also on a daily basis investing with your time, your money into the people you associate with, the farmers you associate with, and you buy products from. And by going to a farm like Crossing Creek, you get to talk to the owners. You get to talk to them. You get to see the animals. You get to pet them, right? So you understand the full circle of what you're buying, the full supply chain. You get to understand it. You get to build that relationship. And that, to me, is investing on a daily basis as well. Far too often you hear people, yeah, you go.
So one of the things that's great, I went back and I looked at the curriculum in the 1800s in Texas of what kids were learning in the schools, and they were learning all the algebras of how to put in a crop, you know, how to buy the seed, plant the seed, put in a crop, finance the crop if they had to, harvest the crop and sell it for more than it costs you to make it. It was quite remarkable how sophisticated grade school mathematics and algebra was in support of helping kids learn how to help their parents farm in Texas, literally in the 1850s. And when you sit at Crossing Creek Farm, all the kids are working in the farm and they're in the discussions of all these different things. And it's, you know, they're getting that incredible education and an understanding of mathematics and how it relates to making the farm be a successful economic enterprise.
You know,
that's excellent. This is a perfect example of a business model that is family, community, passion, and contributes to fighting this battle, ultimately. I mean, that's a perfect one for this.
Right. And when you sit down and talk with the people, everybody's, you know, whether it's the people, you know, the grandparents, the parents, the kids, a lot of the people coming to visit, and the animals, everybody looks so healthy. And you think, this is real wealth building.
I would like to see.
James.
I would like to see the community gardens come back. I think that would be a great thing. If you can't really afford a farm, a lot of people don't have farmland and they can't afford a farm. But there's empty lots in almost every community, and people just come together. They can build, do community farming. They did that in Detroit, where I'm from, to the abandoned houses, and it turned out to be great. Brought the community together. A lot of great, you know, wholesome food. I just wanted to throw that in.
There's a beautiful business here in Shelbyville called the Winter Circle. It's a tax store. So it's all things equestrian because, you know, this area is the home of celebration in the Tennessee Walking Horse Championship. So we're right in the heart of Tennessee Walker Country. Anyway, David Thomas, who runs Shelbyville now, which is a little media company that's wonderful, he's got a tax store called the Winning Circle. And I was in there the other day, and his sister lives in an apartment with no land at all, James. And she's got these stacked pots with soil in them, and it's growing a huge amount of vegetables. When she told me what she was growing, I was dumbfounded. So you can just grow it on your balcony.
Yeah, our guest David
Devine. Absolutely. A lot of people do that. I'm in a situation right now where I've literally had to go out every day and monitor where the sun is hitting because there's so many trees. So I've narrowed it down to about a 5 foot by 18 foot stretch that gets 3 hours of sun a day. And then I have everything stacked in that little row.
Wow. Okay.
You just got to work with what you have, you know?
Yeah.
Well, for those that want to subscribe to the solution series that aren't members of Solari.com, we have some of those things we covered in the solution series, some of that growing in the house and some micro gardening and that type of thing. So if you're just looking, if you're just watching this and you're not a member, please sign up and enjoy all those great videos.
Yeah. Can I just take the conversation back slightly and talk about those local farmers? So these efforts are fantastic. And there is also ways, if you don't have the space, to go out and support your local farmers and the people that really need that money. If you're questioning where to invest your money or talking to your investment advisor, please think about the local options you have as well, because these people need the capital, because they don't necessarily have the access to cheap capital that companies out there, publicly listed stocks with hyper modern tech promises of revenue somewhere in the future, or some sustainable green model that have access to cheap green capital. They don't have that. So you want to go out and you want to support them. If there's a way you can set up a loan model, you can free a farmer from his debt. And that's also a way of getting a, say, a dividend or something like that in yield that is being produced on that farm. Those are all examples of how you can make your money work locally and support that local infrastructure. That's a way of securing food freedom. They don't have that access to cheap capital like some of the big guys do. So please go out and support them.
Good point.
Yeah,
Right. And I hate to sound like this, but I'm always saying, don't finance your local farmer because you want to make money. Finance your local farmer because you don't want to eat insects.
Yeah, right
Right.
on.
No, but I'm serious. You know, Ricardo said the middle of the road is going away. The future you want, the only future we're going to get for ourselves is the future we finance.
Yeah, you know, you can do co-op. I mean, I know there's farmers that would get in co-ops if they needed some money to get some crops or needed some money to get their farm up and going. Several people in the community all contribute together, and then they reap the benefits after the harvest. So it's like a co-op, I believe is what they call it.
Right.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
I think one of the things that's really important, because I've been an entrepreneur since my early 20s, and I've created several different businesses, and I've met a lot of people, a lot of entrepreneurs along the way, but also a lot of what I refer to as like opportunists. They have great ideas, but they just don't have the drive to see it all the way through. And so when I come up with ideas all the time, and I started creating like an idea folder so that when people come to me and say, well, what should I do? I don't want to work for Mr. Global or corporate anymore. I'm like, here you go. I have a whole list of ideas of things you can start doing. But I really like the way you guys structured this, because I do think it has, what you decide to do has to be really in line with many factors, and especially something that you're passionate about. You know, if you're not passionate about it, then you're likely not going to see it through.
Right.
That's right. Catherine, do you want me to take that to the next slide? Because that,
yeah.
I think you can perfectly latch it onto this, Turtle Four,
okay.
One of the fundamental principles of building wealth.
So this is the sixth pillar, and Ricardo can tell you there was quite a great deal of controversy on our team, whether it was going to be its own pillar or subsumed in something else. And Catherine was quite insistent. No, Turtle Fourth is going to be its own pillar, because I would argue of all the six pillars, this is the most important one. So Turtle Fourth is about never quitting. And the reality is, the more you've come up against real evil in your life, and Corey, I know you have done this, you know how important it is to never quit. And you know
That's
how
right.
important it is that when that voice says, it's hopeless, there's nothing you can do, you have to quit. And so Turtle Fourth is a philosophy that says, I'm always going to move in the direction of my free, inspired life. And from everything I try, if it doesn't work, I'm going to take a lesson and use that to continue on. So there's a saying in the Course of Miracles, you know, nothing real can be lost, nothing unreal is real. You know, and I used to, as once upon a time, going from a very wealthy member of the establishment to, you know, peanut butter and jelly in the wilderness, I kept thinking, well, I guess that wasn't real. I guess that wasn't real. But I just kept learning, and I just kept networking and connecting with high integrity people. And as I did, and I continued my philosophy of building wealth, in fact, I found my way to a much better world. So, you know, what I would tell you is, if I had stayed where I was, I probably wouldn't have made it. I'd be dead by now. I would have probably taken the injection. I'd be gone. But by just continuous learning, I ended up in an excellent place and a wonderful place. But you've got to never, never quit. Part of turtling is knowing what your principles are and sticking with them. One of my principles is always staying in a state of amusement. So you have to be able to find your joy in the middle of a very uncertain world and a very chaotic world. So I used to have, you know, a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan, a 1-year plan, you know, and I've now lived in periods where if I have a plan for today, I'm lucky. And I know, Corey, you know what I mean by all of this. So we have to have, to build wealth, we have to have a phenomenally high learning speed. And the way you have a phenomenally high learning speed is you learn from everything, you know, that happens, whether it works or it fails. You know, it's always, and you're always moving forward. You put on that hard shell and you just keep going. So Turtle Fourth is, to me, the most important, because with continuous learning, you can master all the other five pillars. And what's important is that we integrate them together. In other words, we integrate organizing around our free and inspired life. We get good maps and navigation tools. We do good risk management. And then we just keep building living equity and financial equity. And we try many things, and some work, many fail. We learn, we build that learning metabolism. And if we just don't quit, ultimately we build the mastery. And we, you know, it's almost like the universe says, well, I guess we can't stop her, so we might as well let Corey through. Anyway, so Turtle Fourth to me is the one we each have to do. And it's a faith walk in a world where we're dealing with serious evil and serious sabotage. It's hard. Turtling is not easy, but it is deeply, deeply rewarding. So, Ricardo, back to you. Any thoughts?
I just want to share one story. Now that we're here in Ascending Broadcasting out of Tennessee, you took me to this beautiful, wonderful church called World Outreach here in Tennessee. And that, to me, growing up in the Netherlands, and not necessarily growing up with a lot of religion around me, was a wonderful culture shock. I loved it. But the pastor said something that is perfectly in line with what you just alluded to. And as you start to turtle forth and things become difficult, I think big part of that is where you put your mind to focus on. The pastor said this. He said, instead of focusing on the things you cannot keep, because you're going to lose them somehow, rather focus on the things you cannot lose, meaning your family, your loved ones, etc. Focus on the things you do have and that you cannot lose, rather than focusing on losing 10% of your IRA, right?
Right.
So that's really the mental attitude. So I just wanted to share that story because that was a wonderful experience.
You know, it's funny because World Outreach Church has been built by Alan Jackson, the current pastor, and his father before him. So their family. And it started off as a tent. And now it's a huge campus with unbelievable number of activities, educational things going on, sermons, community. It's got a bookstore. It's got a coffee bar. It's just, you know, it's a huge operation. If you just, I was saying to Ricardo, if you look at the audio visual productions, you know, they're broadcasting all around the world. So that's a perfect example of another enterprise that builds wealth because basically, if you look at what they're doing, they're trying to build healthy, strong individuals and families.
You know, I'd like to bring it back to my uncle told me when I was just a young man. He says, Jimmy, if you have to work for a job, when you get your paycheck, make sure you pay yourself first. Can you talk about that as far as sound advice for people that are looking to move forward? And I think what he meant is take side a part of your paycheck and put it aside for your investment or for you first before you pay the rest of your bills. Can you, either one of you, comment on that as far as...
Sorry, you want to take that, Ricardo?
Sure. And I think I want to answer that by, again, going back to, look, I only went once, but see what I've learned. Because the second point is going to be that one of the things the pastor shared, he said, you want to accumulate as much money as possible. Then you want to save as much money as possible. And then you want to hand out as much money as possible. And part of that is, I think, to allude to your point, James, is first you want to give yourself enough money that sustains your situation, your family, your goals, that vision that you're working towards before paying all those bills. Now, that could also be a way of financial budgeting. Financial budgeting is part of the financial equity pillar. That's, I mean, if you reduce it back to that very tactic, it would be something very practical. So as soon as the money comes in, you first give yourself something that gives you that the mental momentum of success. I think that's what you're probably meaning with that. And then you pay off the bills. And then as soon as you do that, you have this amount of money that you can then do with whatever you like. You could take your family out for dinner, or you can invest some of that or save some of that. But I think that's one of the more practical sides of financial budgeting, if you will.
Yeah, and I want to add to that. When you look at taking for yourself, So there is a whole world of investments you can make in yourself, whether it's eating the right food or getting an education.
That's right.
And you always want to be thinking about how can I invest in myself, because that's the wealth you can't lose. Once you learn a skill, that skill makes you more powerful, more resilient. It gives you economic strength. But the other thing is you may want to invest it in building something that allows you to do for yourself. So if you can take some of that money and start a garden, if you can take some of that money and provide your own well. So I'm always telling the story about my client who used to always complain about the yields on her stock portfolio going down and her water bill going up. And I said, this is simple, you know, just sell some stock and build a well. So if you invest in doing something that makes you economically more protected against inflation and economically resilient going forward, or gives you the skills to be able to generate revenue or do for yourself. So always look and saving in a way that's giving you strength in your financial statements or strength in your balance sheet or strength in your skills and ability to be economically relevant.
Yeah, and that, just another thought on that. Mathematically speaking, you can only reduce your expenses so much, but you can increase your income as much as you like. That's all going to be possible if you become more economically relevant, as Catherine just said. The more, the higher your productivity, the more you add to people's lives or the businesses around you, the more you can ask it in return for that, the higher the price you can ask. So you don't have to bother as much about the expenses. You just focus on growing that income side of things. But that's going to require you understanding how the money works around you and how you can provide an added value there.
So yesterday, yeah, I was just thinking about, as far as savings go, you know, we did the one episode with Jen Walters and Matt Hale, mm-hmm. provided, my gosh, so many resources in that one, and so many ways of saving just on healthcare. And so I think while someone's working on building the business model or the wealth that they're looking to do, also be looking at other areas to save, not just save money, but also find better resources that you trust more, you know?
Right. So a lot of that is not just lowering the cost of your energy or healthcare, but ensuring that you have high integrity providers and support.
Right.
Right.
Right. And the other thing is, I would say, the two top things that I often hear from people is, well, I would love to grow my own food and I would love to have a homestead, but I can't afford the land, or I don't, you know, I just don't have enough land and I don't know how to do this. And then there's the biggest one is probably, I want the healthy meat and I want to be able to buy from the farmers, but I just can't afford that. And so how do you address those two big issues for people when it comes to building wealth or coming up with ways to, I don't know, build a business model, work with right. family, friends?
So a lot of the strategies depend on who you are, where you are, and who's around you. But there are many things you can do to afford much higher quality food. Let's say you organize with other people, start a shopping club. And everyone, you know, everyone once a week goes down to the terminal markets and start shopping for the group, and you're getting great stuff literally at 50% off because you're going down to the terminal market and buying wholesale. Or, you know, I used to be part of a community garden where I would work a couple of hours in the garden every week in exchange for getting a whole bunch of free stuff. And again, you know, where I was just talking about Dave Thomas's sister, who's, you know, growing stuff on her, you know, condominium balcony. So there are many ways to do it. But first you have to create an intention of doing it. And then you just have to start turtling. I don't know anybody who can't start in the space where they're living to start growing some herbs and sprouts or other things in their living space, and while they're doing it, they're learning how to do it, and they can start to do more and more and then extend from there. So if you're thinking you don't have the time or you don't have the money, you're not looking creatively at the question of how are you going to get healthy and nutritious food, because if you don't, you're not going to make it.
Right.
I mean, that's a fact. And so the question is not, you know, why is it hard to do? The question is, what are you going to do to jump the curve? And I dare say in any neighborhood in America, there are hundreds and hundreds of people who, if they organize, could make it possible for each other to jump the curve, but they're not doing it.
Right.
And one person has money, one person has time. Get together because you both need fresh food.
Right. Ricardo, do me a favor. Are you able to unshare the presentation there?
Yes, ma'am. There you go.
There we go.
There you go.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Everyone. Hey, welcome back. Welcome back.
Can I just share one more thing on that whole food discussion? Everybody who thinks that food should not be a priority from an investment standpoint, I challenge you to eat McDonald's for 6 months. And then the next 6 months of the year, you're going to eat grass-fed, organic, from a trusted farmer, good protein. See what that does to your brain. See what that does to your ability to be economically relevant. I just challenge everybody to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. McDonald's for 6 months.
They did a movie about that, didn't they, or something? That was kind of crazy.
Yeah, and after 3 weeks, his doctor told him he was running the risk of dying. So, they had to stop.
Well, they've got McDonald's hamburgers and French fries that have literally been frozen in suspension for like 3 and 4 years and haven't molded or anything.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Something's going wrong. Something's wrong there.
So can I just say one thing, you know, to back up Ricardo's point? I was sitting at a neighbor's house in Tennessee once, and I was at a birthday party, and the hostess had brought a whole bunch of bags back from a fast food restaurant to go unnamed. And the person sitting across from me was not eating it, and I was not eating it. So I said to her, "Why are you not eating the food from the fast food restaurant?" And she said, "Oh, well, I used to work at an auction house," as though somehow that would explain it. And I said, "So?" And she said, "We used to separate out the diseased animals so that the fast food restaurants could buy them because it would lower their costs."
Oh, my God.
Oh,
right.
Wow, nice.
Right.
Wow. Okay, right. I have to side topic for a second and just ask, what is going on now at this point in time with the Dutch farmers and everything?
I'm glad you asked that, because we're just about to publish 2 weeks of 4 interviews with Dutch farmers and fishermen.
Wow.
So great. I would say, these are blockbusters. I'm going to say stay tuned. And so that's coming out with a presentation by Elsa von Homlin. As you know, I think, Corey, you read Pharma Food, which we published in January, by Elsa, who goes through all the high-tech the biotech and pharmaceutical foods that are being planned for us, including the insects and the lab-grown meat. And it's one of the most frightening things I've ever read. We'll come out with a hard copy in the next 1 or 2 months. But Elsa has followed up by doing interviews with the farmers and fishermen. And it's, you know, just stay tuned at Soleri.
Oh, I can't wait. Elsa's phenomenal. We actually had her on a while after you had released that report. We had her on our Dig It podcast.
Right. Phenomenal. Yeah. Phenomenal, phenomenal report. And
yeah.
You know, and that's why I say, if you're not sufficiently motivated to create your local food systems, whether you're doing it on your, you know, next to your kitchen sink or out on the balcony or in your backyard, read Pharma Food and you'll get going.
Excellent. So I just want to let people know who are not Soleri subscribers, but who are Corey's Dig subscribers. We will have underneath the video, there will be a link to Building Wealth with username and password for you to access all of this.
Right. And let me make one more pitch. And it's one of the many reasons we're so glad that Ricardo is helping us lead this. And that is, my hope with Building Wealth is we can take all the knowledge of our older and more experienced subscribers and pass it quickly to children, grandchildren, and young people so that they have a way of coming up and building wealth in this environment and basically get to jump the curve on the tricks of Mr. Global. So one of the most exciting things for me in the Soleri Report Network is I'll sit down and I'll start working through building wealth with people who, you know, they were in Madoff or they got wrecked by vaccine injury, or, you know, they've lived through all the different games that have destroyed family financing or just, you know, destroyed enterprises. and the thought that they can pass this down to the next generation so that they can help the young people sort of navigate and jump the curve on all these obstacles is very, very exciting. And that's why it's so important that we make sure for the young people who are willing to take responsibility and do work, it is so important that the older generations help and support and protect them, because if they jump the curve, they build our future for all of us.
You know, 100%.
We're coming right up on an hour, and that's usually the time of the podcast, so we can certainly keep going. But I just want to say before we do close out, I was honored to be invited to be a part of this solution series. And Catherine, I really always appreciate your work, and I admire what you do. And Corey, of course, we've been friends for a long time, and you do great work as well. So I just want to thank you both for allowing me to come on the broadcast and do my thing. Thank you very much.
Right, and it was so great to have that voice. It sounds like a million-dollar guy, that radio voice, that million-dollar guy on the corporate. I thought, oh, wow, we're in the big time now.
Well, geez,
you got a voice like a Ferrari.
I'm flattered.
James.
I'm flattered. Thanks very much.
He does, right? I said, no way I'm doing this series if I can't bring James along.
Well, it was great. It was great. I learned a lot of great stuff and got a chance to meet a lot of great people, and, you know, virtually. But, man, I learned a lot of good stuff from a lot of things, a lot of the guests. And, again, my hat's off to what you do, and thanks again for letting me be part of it. I just want to say that officially.
Thank you, and Corey, thank you. I'll never forget. I don't know if you remember this, Corey, but the pandemic started, and we had a lot of people saying, "Oh, it's a, you know, there's no real sickness. This is just an op." And you did this great piece on, no, people are really getting sick, and there's what this nurse says, and here's what it was really intelligence from the ground. And I said, I love this woman. I got to get to know her.
Yeah. Well, and then I didn't even know that at the time. And then I reached out to you because it was when you were doing your little map of when they were doing all the destruction and you were showing how it connected and tied into real estate and how they were going to move.
Oh, yeah. The riots.
Her mind works like mine. I really got to connect with her.
How to make money on riots and destroying cities.
Well, there is a whole line of misery capital, isn't there? There's a whole bunch of misery capitalists out there that love that stuff. They make a lot of money when that happens. Anyway,
they make a lot of money. And that's why it's so important we know how to duck. We know how to see it coming, and we know how to duck.
That's right.
Well, I super appreciate both of you and you as well, Ricardo.
Well, I just want to say on behalf of the younger generation out there, thank you very much for being that role model and for providing those role models of people that are doing the groundwork and are doing the hard work and making those tough decisions. Because believe me, we're not all on TikTok. There is people out there that do want to build usable stuff, productive stuff for the world. So thank you for providing that learning opportunity.
Sure.
Well, folks, there it is. I usually say I'll see you next time, but there won't necessarily be a next time here in the Solution Series. But we do want to thank Catherine Austin Fitz and Ricardo Oscom for being here today, of course, and Corey Lynn, my faithful and knowledgeable co-host, has always been here by my side on every show. Corey, it's been great doing Solution Series with you, and I'm sure we'll remain friends for life. But it was great taking this year out and spending some time with you all during the weeks and getting stuff ready and communicating with you and doing the show. So thanks so much for you, Corey. I appreciate you allowing me to come on board.
Thank you. It has been fun. There have been some challenging times where we were rushed in on deadlines.
It's been fun. It has been
fun. My parents just said last night, James called me while we were in the middle of eating, and he said, "Oh, tell him I said hi." And my dad's in the background going, "Tell him we're ready for another euchre match." James and I crushed him.
We crushed him. But they're great people. Your parents. Parents are great people. All right, folks, I think that'll wrap it up. Anything that either one of you would like to say in closing before we go ahead and close out the podcast?
So there's a whole Solari team who have been involved in the Solution Series behind the scenes. And I know they've been thrilled, and I do want to recognize them and their support and just remind you again how much they appreciate what you've done. So
they've been fantastic. Yeah, I worked with them on getting, you know, the videos up, and Claire, of course, editing the commentary, and they've all been absolutely wonderful. So, yes, thank you to the whole
Solari. Yeah, a lot of fans on the Solari team.
Okay, folks, if you want to sign up for the solution series, just go to solari.com or coreysdigs.com, and you can sign up there, and you get all 24 episodes. So this will be the last episode here. I don't know what's going to happen after, as we're talking about doing a best of, but we'll talk about that offline. Again, we do appreciate everybody and all the support we have at the Solution Series and all those people that signed up and said nice things about the series. We thank you for that. And once again, we'll see you next time, I guess, whenever that is. And this is James White now signing off for the Solution Series.